everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. On the other side of the glass, not my side, we keep him in the control room, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, you know it is Friday, May the 13th, 2022.
Well, you had to bring it up.
Oh,
everybody has not mentioned it. We
I
have
know.
Been ignoring it, but no, Bill has to bring it up.
I think it's better just to be out transparent. Okay, Friday the 13th, it's going to be a fabulous day. It already has been. And we'll keep the mojo working here.
Yeah, if we don't bother it, it won't bother us.
Yep, 1030 KVOI, that's our radio station, The Voice, for trusted news and talk. We're in our 12th year with our radio project, and when you count my TV experience, 22 years at Channel 6, that's the 34th year of TV and radio here in Tucson. So as they say, he didn't get off the bus yesterday. He's been around. Worldwide live listening and podcasts on my website, buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, that's sponsored by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. So thankful for all of our media friends, our media partners like Dylan Smith at TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Dan Shear. Folks are going to be hearing a little more of Dan over the next couple of weeks when I go on vacation after today's show. Tucson Local Media Group, Jim Nintzel and the Tucson Weekly, and they also have a couple of other publications, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. With me for our Friday Focus interview, Sharon McDonough is here. Sharon, how are you?
I'm well.
A pleasure to have you on the show. You're the new director, relatively new. I guess you could say within a year, somebody's still new, because you came on board, what, as the director 4 months ago?
Right, in December when Chad Casmar went over to Tucson Police.
There you go. So Sharon is new director of Tucson's Public Safety Communications Department, the office that houses the city's 911 call center. Sharon has been with the city over 3 decades of experience working for the city of Tucson, first starting her career in 1990 as an EMT for the Tucson Fire Department. And most recently, she served as the interim director for the 911 center under Chad Casmar, who was promoted to chief of police in December. And joining us here in our conversation with Sharon is Eddie Celaya, beat writer. Well, I can't say he, well, yeah, you are. You're a beat writer, but the beat is the marijuana beat, right, Eddie?
It's the best beat in town.
There though. You go. And he has covered the marijuana beat now for about a year, has it been?
Just a little short of the year now. Yeah.
And now is hosting a every other week podcast. I love the title, Hear Weed, W-E-E-D, Go.
That's it. Here we go.
Which also has a newsletter and all that, but we'll talk with Eddie one-on-one after we have our interview with Sharon, because we certainly have no shortage of topics to talk about with Sharon McDonough. Sharon, it's been, the media has liked it, has characterized the call center as a troubled center. Is some of the trouble behind us? Let's put it that way.
Well, I sure hope so. I think we're making progress every day. I mean, it's, you know, this group of people has just had a really rough decade. 7 different leadership teams in the past 10 years.
Whoa, kind of 7 yeah. bosses in yeah. 10 years or
and,
so?
You know, everybody comes in with their own flavor and their own
sure.
objectives yeah. and new changes. And I think it makes it hard for our team to really get their feet under them and kind of get united as a team. And so there's a lot of people who have just struggled through that survivorship kind of mentality of how do we get keep moving forward, keep serving our community. And huge testament to the people who have stuck it out through all of that and still remain dedicated to the profession and serving our community. And they're still with us today, and we're super thankful to have them there as the experts.
And Sharon, the vast majority of the public has no idea about kind of the behind the scenes. They have an emergency. They call 911. Could you give us kind of an overview what we're talking about with staffing? What is your particular portfolio?
So right now, our staffing is an issue, and our retention is really a big piece of the reason why. When we go down into deeper root causes, we look at training and lack of training, lack of solid support of our supervisors and their ability to get things done when they're staffing short and calls are still coming in. We also have to look at the fact that a lot of people call us for non-emergencies and really tie up our lines. So we had an assessment done on our center. We should have about 219 employees there. We are currently improved to about 165.
That's a big difference.
Huge difference. And then we have about 130 filled right now, but about 40 of those are in training. So deployable, we have about 90 people. So when you look at 90 versus that 219, we've got a lot of stress, a lot of overtime, asking people to come in and fill the seats.
That's a constant, that's a 24/7 personnel problem.
Right, it is. And it's 24/7, you're right. I mean, during COVID, nobody stayed home, nobody worked remotely. We're in this, you know, tight little room with all of our best friends trying to, you know, manage this incredible call load. About 3,600 calls a day.
Police.
Are going through that.
Police,
mm-hmm.
Fire.
EMS. Eight other fire departments beyond Tucson.
Merged into one center. So mm-hmm. The call, if it's a police call or a fire call, it's coming into 911. That merger happened about 4 years ago. Is that the protocol of a medium-sized or toward a major, we're a major city, is that the typical protocol?
Typical protocol to have it merged?
Yeah.
Well, we're one of only a handful of consolidated centers, and there's lots of reasons for that across the country. But it does make things harder. If we get good at it, it makes things more efficient. So instead of us handing off a call to a particular individual, we can track and hang on to that call all the way through. So when the call comes in, it used to be we'd go, this is 911, what's your emergency? And we would hand it off to another call taker.
That takes time.
Right. So time is happening. You're having to repeat your address multiple times. You've got frantic people on the other end of the line. Some of those things weren't working well. And we'd hand them off to police or fire, and then they'd have another wait there. And there's, you know, heightened concern, and now your caller is getting a little more anxious. So now with the new system, our call takers are being trained to handle whatever call comes in right from the start and then hand it off to the dispatcher. So there's only that one piece that happens. And even then, the call taker remains with that caller the entire time.
Let's bring in Eddie now. Eddie Salaya. Go ahead, Eddie.
So with that consolidation, I believe there can come like a culture of rivalry, can there not? And that's what was reported in the Arizona Daily Star last year when there was a transition of power at the top. Is that still the case in the department?
Well, it depends who you ask. It is one of the things we're working very hard to solve, right? We had, when we got there, a distinct separation of police-borne, fire-borne. And police and fire, even in the field, think about emergency scenes differently. We approach differently. Police approach from a safety-initiated standpoint. We approach, the fire side approaches a little more from what's the medical issue going on.
So if somebody's up in a tree, they may look at it in two different ways.
Two different ways. Great example. You know, what kind of questions would we ask? Mm-hmm. So a medical trained call taker is going to say, is he conscious? Is he alert? How old is he? A police trained call taker may ask for a description. What's he wearing? Is he Hispanic, white, black? Like all of those questions that to the medical side, they're going, well, why does that matter? So there has been a huge need for us to really understand each other. And consolidations routinely across the country result in a massive exodus of employees, about 50%. We suffered from that too. We lost people who just said, I never want to deal with the police things, or vice versa, I never want to deal with the fire things. So our training was a root cause issue because we would train them to take police calls and then train them to take fire calls. Now we're just training them to take calls. Just whatever call comes in.
Eddie, did you have a follow?
Well, yeah, I guess with that, you know, training to kind of consolidate that into a, like, we're just taking calls sort of thing. Has there been any pushback to that where it's like, hey, like, there's a reason that we're asking these more specific or more pointed questions in the manner that we are?
So when when you say that, it depends where the call leads the caller, or leads the call taker, right? If we know there's a safety issue, there's a different set of questions that come with it. If we know it's medical, it's going down a different string. So what we're asking these call takers to know is those very basic things that say, which string am I going down? Which algorithm am I following to get the information? I know police needs this information. I know fire needs that. And that's set up into the system with a program that we use that kind of guides that call-taking process.
So I guess the follow-up to that is, let's say I'm having a heart attack and I call 911. What does the process look like from there? And then what is the infrastructure to notify the proper authorities from
that
point?
To get them to respond. So what happens is we ask a series of questions. So say, you know, nobody ever calls in and says, I'm having a heart attack.
Yeah.
They call in and say, I don't feel right. And we guide that question. Okay, what's going on? Are you conscious and alert? You know, we could tell if they're conscious and alert, but are you having chest pain? Are you having nausea? Are you having difficulty breathing? And as they're picking those selections within the program, it's guiding them towards, this is a heart attack. We apply a code. That code speaks to our computer-aided dispatch system that selects the right response and sends it in the background. So it's super efficient. So if we're getting to where it's, I have chest pain because someone punched me.
Yeah.
Versus I have chest pain because I'm having a heart attack. They're getting two different response types. And those response types will be different based on the need at that scene. And that is based on what we know to be true from years of data to say, what did these people actually need when we got there? There's still always, you know, inefficiencies because callers are not super reliable. Sometimes our sickest people will report the most minor thing. Sometimes the most minor people will make it sound like it's a catastrophe going on at that scene. On the police side, their questions are geared more towards safety. Are there weapons? Where is this person at? And one of the distinct differences between the two call types is fire incidents are right where they're at and they stay there. Police incidents travel. Right? He shot someone here and then he took off in his car and he went that way. Mm. So it's a lot more complex.
Hadn't thought
together.
About that.
Yeah.
The police calls are kind of mobile thing. It's something in motion. That's,
right.
And well, the fire, the person's down. Yeah.
Right. The
yeah.
person's down and yeah. here's where they're at and our fire guys know right where to go.
Yeah.
And as those pieces of information come in, it's really critical to get them out to the responding officers. This guy's running left on this street, mm-hmm. and he's wearing these clothes, and he went into this house. So that's that constant updating of information, whereas on the fire side, it's a little less that way.
All right, Sharon, we're going to take a break right now and talk about my favorite bakery, which is super reliable and always consistent. Are you into sweets and bakery goods?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Boston
Good.
Cream Donuts.
Oh,
yeah.
You were in good company.
Yes.
Well, we love Mona's Danish Bakery, which is home of the Danish Kringle. They're up at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're open right now for lunch, and find out why people are waiting in line at 6:30 for Steve and his team to open the doors. Well, I'll give you a hint. Once you get inside, your biggest decision will be, what in the world am I going to pick from that? All those luscious bakery goods in the bakery case. What could you go for right now, Sharon? Would you go, are you into the croissants?
Oh, croissant would be
with a chocolate croissant, maybe with some coffee?
With coffee, absolutely.
Mm. Eddie, what about you?
Oh, man, I'm such a donut person.
Oh.
I had a glazed and a chocolate glazed today.
Well, Steve and the team yeah. make a very, very nice, what they call Danish donut, which is filled with some all sorts of wonderful stuff, kind of cream-based goodies in the middle. Sharon was talking about Boston cream pie or something. Mm. That kind of filling.
Steve, mm-hmm. put me on the holiday mailing list, please.
All right. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. And again, they're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Sharon McDonough talking about the 911 center. Eddie Salaya is here as well. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops.
craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday Focus interview today in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Sharon McDonough is here. Sharon, for the past 4 months, has been the director of the city's 911 call center, but Sharon's been with the city for really since 1990. So she's very familiar with the operations of the city and the 911 center. Eddie Salaya is here. Eddie is the marijuana writer for the Arizona Daily Star. He's also got a new podcast, which we'll talk about later. Eddie, why don't you kick off the questioning for segment two?
So that was a good lead-in. So obviously I'm our cannabis reporter there at the Daily Star. Are you getting more an increase in calls from folks since legalization?
You know, it's so hard for us to tell. I mean, most people aren't willing to just call in and say, hey, I smoked some weed and I need some help, right? So we really, you
now
know,
you
usually...
Can. Yeah.
Now you can.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure that that they would. Mm-hmm. And we certainly don't have a category as we go through saying that, you know, I smoked weed and so now I have a problem. Interestingly, though, so this answer will be vastly different maybe a year from now. We are putting in... an artificial intelligence software that the intention for it is to preempt the call takers, to get them a little faster to the right sequencing, right? Someone's yelling in the background, that ups the ante on what's going on there. Or if they start to put together the fact that the person calling is not breathing well, that can point them higher to a higher priority call. And so if we think about the weed one, if they call in and say, hey, I smoked some weed, that's not getting captured in because it doesn't matter to our dispatch, right? But later, we would be able to pull a report that says anytime the word weed was said, how many did we get of those? Mm. So maybe our answer a year from now would be vastly different. We might have a better indicator of what how many people are calling 911 after smoking weed.
Yeah.
So kind of as a follow-up, and you touched on this earlier, you get calls from people that maybe shouldn't be calling 911 in the first place. What percentage are those calls, and how do you deal? How are agents trained to deal with those calls?
So that's a tough one. We estimate that about half the calls that come into the center are non-emergency calls. And we have to really think about, as a community, why they're calling us in the first place. And it's because we're reasonably nice. We're there 24/7. We answer quickly. They don't get a phone tree. They're not using up their minutes, right? There's so many different reasons, or they're just panicked and we're reliable. So they know that if they call, someone will answer and talk to them. And most likely a resource will be sent, police or fire. Somebody will come and help them with whatever's going on. But we also know that while we get about 3,200 to 3,600 calls a day, only about half of those result in what we call an incident, where police or fire interacted with that situation. We don't have a good feel for what those other calls are because we have no way to track them. All we do is say, sorry, that's not a 911 need, and we hang up because we normally have another call in queue waiting to be answered, and we don't know what's on the other end of that line, so we need to get to it. We did just hire a data analyst who's going to start helping us get a look at that. And we are considering a software that would be related to a 311 type system that may also capture what are people actually calling about. So many of these people who call us, you know, they're hitting the 911 system because some other system failed in the first place. There are true emergencies, right? Like you had shared, Bill, that you fell and broke your arm.
Yeah,
those are
would be an emergency to one person might not be an emergency to another.
Right. And we know that people who are calling because they just need a ride or they're cold or they're hungry, that's because other systems failed. Mm-hmm. Or they're having a mental health crisis. It's because they weren't connected to the right resource to avoid the 911 system.
Mental health crisis, i.e. the suicide category, if someone is saying that they feel suicidal or something, is that call then immediately channeled to a suicide hotline, or how does that work?
So right now, we don't like to hand anybody in a critical stage off to
another
unknown, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe get a phone tree or a slowdown.
Right.
So Tucson is one of the few 911 centers in the country that has crisis workers in our center.
Really?
Answering phones. And they're trained crisis workers. They are not just call takers. They have degrees, they know the business, and they know how to talk to these people in that moment. So that's where we send those calls.
I did not know that. So there's someone in-house there when they call.
Yeah, we try to have two every day. It's not always that way. And we don't have them staffed 24/7. And in those cases, we send them over to the Crisis Call Center, which is a local call center. They manage about 33,000 calls a year because we know they're getting connected directly to a crisis worker. And then sometimes we send crisis teams out directly, and sometimes with police, sometimes with fire.
One of the things we have not talked about, and it's so important, is the national standard, which says 95% of calls need to be answered within 20 seconds. How does Tucson fare in that regard?
Well, we missed the mark.
Okay.
And we don't miss it by much, but we have seen a steady improvement despite our shortages, but despite the increase in call load. And that's just a testament to our people and their dedication to the system. We last month had about a 93%, and there we have kind of had a steady increase from 89 upward. We do know that different centers across the country have different workflows that cause them to hit that mark easier or not. And we know that different staffing algorithms affect that number. Certainly a big goal for us to get there and stay there steadily over that national average. Or national requirements.
So when someone calls 911, what would your people like that person, how should they handle themselves?
Well,
I know that's kind of a weird thing to put out there, but if someone, you know, calls 911, is there a certain protocol that makes things move quickly?
You know, I think the single biggest thing they could do is to try to calm themselves. And our call takers are trained to help that happen. And we recognize that when an emergency is happening, that is really hard to do. But what we need to start with, and it does frustrate people at times, is a confirmation of the address. We do have a couple softwares in place that allow us to track where you are. So if you're not able to give an address, we are making a pretty good guess. But what we don't want to do is make a guess and find out it was wrong, and now you're not getting resources there. So one of the first things we're going to ask is that confirmation of the address. And then next, the simple question is, what's going on there? And the answer from that caller is what guides the algorithms that will follow, whether it's a police algorithm, a fire algorithm, what are they actually reporting, and go from there. So if they could be clear, calm, answer our questions. A lot of people just yell out a lot of things, and they don't really give us the answers that we need to move that call to the correct dispatch.
It's so important that when these people that are working at 911, wow, it's a difficult job, and you're managing city resources. I mean, even to roll a fire truck. I asked you this before the interview. I'd never heard that before, but just that truck going out the station door is $500. Mm-hmm. And then the meter is running from there. It's very expensive. Not that should really be the paramount. I mean, for the managers, they're going to look at those things. But the most important thing is getting the resources out properly.
It is. I mean, we are, you know, the fiduciaries of the resources in the city. And we take that seriously. We don't want to oversend, because now that unit is not available for the next emergency. Mm-hmm. We don't want to undersend, because we want that person who's there to have exactly what they need for their best chance at survival, if it's medical, or for the officers to have the resources they need to safely contain a situation. So we try to be, that's the reason for some of the questioning. And one thing a lot of callers don't know is that we start that dispatch early on in the call. Just because we're continuing to ask questions doesn't mean those resources aren't already rolling towards you. We're just gathering more info for the responding units to be prepped. If I prep you ahead of time and say, hey, we're going to a person, we don't really know what's going on, versus I say, a guy got hit by a car, versus a stroke, it is helping those firefighters and the EMTs responding to get mentally prepared for what they're going to do.
And line up the proper
the right equipment off the truck,
there,
all of those things.
That equipment then will be ready for the guys, men and women, when they jump out of the truck.
Mm-hmm. And on the police side, you know, we get calls for suspicious people all the time. And if we send a police officer to a suspicious person, it could turn into a bad situation that, you know, we've seen it all over the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
We don't allow that anymore. We really drill in with people and say, well, what makes them suspicious?
Yeah, what is it that's got you calling that really, what's triggering this?
What's really going on? A person walking through your neighborhood wearing a hoodie is not suspicious.
No.
A person peering into your windows or trying door handles, now that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we know that we've got to be good partners with police and fire to help set the stage before they even get there.
Let's bring in Eddie Celaya.
So we talked a little bit earlier about the staffing shortage. Where are you focusing your recruiting efforts at? And as kind of a follow-up to that, what are the candidates that you're looking for? And what hurdles, educationally, personality-wise, do they kind of need to, not overcome, but do they need to meet in order to kind of meet the standards?
Well, we're advertising on some of our national groups, like ABCO and NENA. And we are advertising at job fairs consistently. We're showing up with police and fire and saying, hey, we're that other third leg. One thing we find is that if people are interested in public safety, they're interested. And there's people who are interested but not able to be a firefighter or not able to be a cop. Or we even have people who went and tried that out and said, you know, that's not for me, but I really like the excitement or the interesting and the lack of boring day
sure.
that comes with that 911 call taking.
Mm-hmm.
So to be a 911 call taker, there's a couple of requirements. One, you have to have your high school education.
Okay.
Two, you have to have a servant attitude that says, I don't care how ridiculous this phone call may sound. I'm going to be a good listener.
Service-oriented person.
Service-oriented. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is you have to have a clean background because you're able to find out and look up information about people that's private. You know, their criminal backgrounds, their medical backgrounds. So we will do a background check on you to make sure that you are clean and will stay that way. We do a certain level of a psych eval to determine that you're well-suited for the position. And we do drop people through that process.
Do you test for cannabis?
We do not.
Can you make some money doing this? I know there's a lot of OT involved right now.
There is a lot of overtime involved. And we are thankful to the staff who are willing to spend extra time with us to meet the needs of our community.
But the hourly wage isn't that great.
The hourly wage isn't that great. And it's a great improvement over what it was a year ago.
What are you, at 18 an hour now?
18 an hour for a trainee.
Okay.
Once they get through their first block of training, which is call taker training, they get bumped up to 20.
Okay.
But one thing I think we always got to think about is the stability and the benefits that being a city employee brings, because there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And while you might be able to go get a call center job, do you go home every day with a level of satisfaction that you contributed in a meaningful way? And I know that's big with a lot of the millennials. We hear that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I want a meaningful job. I don't care as much about the wage. And then the benefits is the stability of the benefits that, you know, we're not going to just fire you because I don't like you. And you have insurance benefits and dental benefits and
vacation,
all the things that come with that. Pension system, all of that. Paid vacation.
Mm-hmm. Eddie, anything else that you have before we let Sharon go?
I guess it's kind of a fun, silly question. Mm. What are some of the, like, most ridiculous
crazy calls.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Crazy calls.
Well, we've had people call and say, my phone only dials 911, so I'm wondering if you could order me a pizza. We have had individuals say that a gentleman who was in a hotel bathroom, and he said he was pressing the button to get help because he was out of toilet paper, but nobody was answering.
Oh my goodness.
It runs the gamut, and it would shock people, but sometimes it just brings a level of levity to the center for a moment, because some of the other calls, as you know, are just critically difficult when they're giving, you know, CPR instructions to a mom who's, you know, trying to save her 6-year-old who drowned, and then when they hang up from that call, you know, they're on to the next one, and it's tough.
My friend Bill Spurbeck, who you know, is on the show this week, talking about CPR training, and his group is CPR to you. I assume all the 911 people have been trained in CPR.
That's correct. And and more importantly, trained in how to instruct it over the phone.
Because that's a different situation there, being able to verbalize that effort.
And helping them keep, you know, when we say 200 continuous chest compressions,
yes.
Well, how fast are those?
Yeah.
So you'll even hear some of our call takers sing the song "Staying Alive."
Staying alive,
because it keeps the rhythm going, and you know, and then the constant encouragement to the provider to say you've got this, keep going. The guys are on their way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole different ballgame on the other end, and they often don't get to know what the outcome was. So part's hard too.
So what's your priority here? Number one is the staffing. What are you putting in order of priority here for you now?
So one, you know, ours is staffing, retention, meeting those national standards, and taking good care of our employees. And we have a lot of efforts going in a lot of directions to meet all of those. The mental health of our employees is super critical. And they've been underappreciated for a long time. They're just, you know, there's police and they're fire, and then those are the heroes, and our folks are just kind of in the background.
Are they feeling better about the situation?
I think so. And
do you bring them donuts on Fridays?
We do. We bring snacks. Yes,
huge.
Absolutely.
That's huge.
But we have signs of health, right? When we offered up a couple promotional opportunities recently, and we had a massive number of people putting in for those. A year ago when they offered those, nobody put in.
Really?
So those are little indicators that say, okay, I'm starting to believe that I have a place in this organization and I have an opportunity to grow my career. I believe, and I have socialized to my bosses, that we don't need another rotating leadership team. We need to grow them from within.
Sure.
These are the experts. We just need to give them the growth opportunities, the training, and the hope that the one day they move up and run the place because they know how it works.
All right. There may be someone listening right now that would love to come work for you. What would be the procedure?
Well, if they log on to the city's website at cityoftucson.com and go to the jobs, we are listed right there saying, come on down, join us. We do have a couple openings. We have a call taker trainee, which is the starting
sure.
point. And
mm-hmm.
then we are also advertising police dispatchers and fire dispatchers who are people maybe from other areas of the
sure.
country who are relocating and
yeah.
or just, you know, looking for a change.
Age limit?
No age limit. We recently had a trainee who was 72 years old.
Great.
Yeah, no age
but
limit.
But on the other side, you have to be, what, 18? Is there
18 years
yeah.
old and
with a high school,
with a high school
diploma.
Diploma or GED.
Okay.
And in fact, we're starting to work with the JTED group to see
sure.
if they'll take that on as an option.
Thank you, Sharon. I think 911 is in the right hands. Sharon McDonough, thank you very much. Good luck. We'll bring you back in a while and see how things are, get an update. How's
okay,
that?
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks very much. Eddie, stick around. We've got some things to talk about.
I'll be here.
All right. We'll be right back. Buckmaster on a Friday.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We thank Sharon McDonough, who is the new director of the 911 Center. I think they have a really outstanding person in Sharon, very transparent, very professional, seems to be turning around an area, Eddie Celaya, that had really had some problems. Eddie Celaya is with us from the Arizona Daily Star. He is covering the cannabis beat for the Star, and really his experience in that area is now expanding. Not that, I phrased that wrong. Your experience in that area not expanding, but let's put it, your professional experience with the Star. Tom's in the other room making some, never mind. You're now doing a podcast. It's titled Here Weed, W-E-E-D, Go, every other week.
Yep.
How did all this come about, Eddie, since you were last on the show?
Wow. So it has been a little bit. It moved quick, but it came down from Lee Enterprises, who's the kind of, I guess, parent owner of the Arizona Daily Star, that they—
At least the last time we looked.
Yes. No. That's true.
No, go ahead.
They wanted to go ahead and put on a podcast, and they had seen some of my content, and I actually used some of my clips that I have from here.
Part of the air check from your appearance right here on the Buckmaster Show.
So I got my first steps
here. Helped you get the gig.
Yeah, they were considering somebody else as well, and they liked my voice a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So they were like, do you have a good name for it? Uh-huh. I came up with the name and the kind of concept to really let people know, number one, who are not at all initiated or really weren't even curious, but we call them now canna-curious. Yes. And even those who are initiated so that they each episode they would learn something new from it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be subjects that are both familiar to those who are familiar with cannabis and familiar to those who are just kind of familiar with the political or pop culture zeitgeist. So,
yeah, because the whole— This extends into so many different areas, from health benefits, you know, to recreation. I mean, a lot of people may not even know, well, there are a lot of people are using just like the creams that are available for aches and pains.
Yeah. Topicals.
So you're covering everything to do with cannabis.
Everything to do with cannabis.
Does that include hemp?
It does include hemp. And we kind of delve into that. The way that hemp is kind of defined here in the United States isn't the way it's defined everywhere in the world.
Okay.
And in my next episode of the podcast, which talks about traveling by air, commercial airline with marijuana or hemp, we dive into that a little bit. Here in the United States, it's defined as something that is 0.3% THC or less.
Okay.
And then anything above that would be considered marijuana.
So that is really something to consider if you're doing a foreign trip.
Yes, most definitely. Any trip of any kind.
Any
if you're going to be getting on a commercial airliner.
To really anywhere.
To anywhere. Regardless, and that's kind of a question a lot of people have where it's like, hey, I'm just flying to California. I'm flying from here in Tucson. Those are two recreational states. Still shouldn't do it.
And Brittany Spinner? The basketball player being held in the Soviet Union. It feels like the Soviet Union. What's
old
been going on?
Die hard,
I know, but what's been going in the Federation feels like the old Soviet Union. She was in court today. Could be facing 10 years because of marijuana-related charges.
Yeah, so they're alleging that she was in possession of some vape cartridges, and we see those all the time, but they're saying in those vape cartridges it contained hashish oil, which is a derivative of the cannabis plant that you can use to vape in those cartridges. So the U.S. is saying that she is unlawfully held. I forget the exact term, but
they're trying to get her released.
Yeah, and they're, from what I've been able to tell from their comments, they're not quite so sure Russia's even telling the truth about her possession.
Not that we have the greatest relationship, or a lot of countries have right now.
Exactly.
This would not be a good time to be held in the Russian Federation. Pima County, Eddie, is set to consider changes in zoning regulations for marijuana dispensaries. Is this a big deal?
It really is, because well, it's a big deal and it's not. It's a big deal because it kind of differs from the city of Tucson. The city of Tucson is taking the next 6 months here to kind of basically carve out a special zoning restriction for social equity license holders. And that 6 months is really significant because that cuts into the 18 months that they have to get a commercial operation up and open. So a lot of folks will not do that. They may turn to unincorporated Pima County now, which is saying, hey, we're going to be welcome to those sort of license holders. However, after talking with a representative from there, he said that even if this ends up going through, he doesn't see more than two or three, not even dispensaries, just cultivation or dispensary sites opening up.
Do you know how many dispensaries there are in Pima County?
16 are operating right now, I believe, with a 17th that
those would
may
be 16
back online
or
soon.
Possibly 17 license holders. Is that right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Is that, do you see that expanding?
I think with the, the social equity licenses were awarded about a month and a half ago. There were 26 of those. I see maybe three or four of those coming to the, you know, greater Tucson, Pima County area. Most of those will probably be in the Maricopa area.
Eddie Celaya, who is carving out a new area. Newspapers, though, are doing this, aren't they? Cannabis Reporters.
We're doing something like this. I think it used to be kind of the realm of the alt-weeklies.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the, I guess, mainstreaming of cannabis, you're starting to see folks like myself, folks at the Roanoke Times, St. Louis Tribune, I believe, is bringing somebody on. New Jersey, the New Jersey Register or NewJersey.com.
In other words, more and more newspapers are expanding.
Totally,
into this area.
It's
well, there's certainly a growing audience for it, if you will. All right, here weed, W-E-E-D, go with an exclamation mark. The next podcast coming up when, Eddie?
Next podcast will be dropping this coming Wednesday. And then the next one after that will be June 1st. After that, we'll be coming to a once-a-week schedule starting June 1st.
And how do we find it?
You can find it on any of the major streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, Audible. You can also find it at Tucson.com, the Arizona Daily Star's website. We've got a player on there that you can stream it on.
Yeah, it's a great place too. Thanks, Eddie. Have a great weekend.
Oh, Bill, thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is next.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Alrighty then, Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Great time to start thinking about a getaway over to Silver City, only about a three-hour drive to a fun and beautiful place of the Land of Enchantment. And mark your calendars, Memorial Day weekend, the Blues Festival returns live and in person. So after the pandemic, it's time to get the blues going again over in Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. It's 80 degrees over in Silver City right now. Going to have a lovely weekend over there. And Matt Russell, longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business, food and beverage columnist, is more than ready for a great weekend. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. You know, I just ran into somebody the other day who was telling me about how much fun they had at that Silver City Blues Festival a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I might just have to do that this year.
Yeah, it's back. And we send so many of our listeners, as you know, over to that beautiful area of New Mexico. Matt, what's going on at the zoo?
Well, I am calling all wild wine lovers, Bill. Let's raise our glasses to conservation and wildlife at the Reed Park Zoo tomorrow night from 6 to 8:30 for Wine Gone Wild. So here's an opportunity to sip some really great regional, national, and international wines. You're going to enjoy tasty cuisine from local chefs like Tucson's very own Iron Chef Wendy Gossier of Chef Chic, Ken Alexander of Ken's Hardwood Barbecue. They're all going to be out there. Live music, encounters with the animals. They're going to have lawn games, all against the backdrop of our truly wonderful zoo. Go to reedparkzoo.org for all the deets.
Hey, Matt, is Second Saturday back up and running?
Yes, absolutely. And it's perfect, Bill, for those looking for sort of an urban vibe. Tomorrow night, of course, another installment of Second Saturday downtown. This is where local vendors and musicians, food trucks, street performers all line Congress Street around Scott Avenue with the sounds and smells of what I think has really become the downtown party. They got three bands scheduled to perform live on the Scott Avenue stage. Many area restaurants are going to be offering specials and discounts. Second Saturdays, definitely a place to see and be seen, and it's tomorrow from 5 to 10 p.m.
Is there anywhere to wear the green this weekend?
Well, you know what? I guess you could call this a continuation of your Mother's Day celebrations as a mother-daughter high tea is scheduled for tomorrow from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Northminster Presbyterian Church. It's a fundraiser for this fall's Tucson Celtic Festival, and they're going to be serving a traditional high tea, of course, with those dainty sandwiches and scones and pastries. Now, this year's theme is sunflowers, so keep that in mind as you plan your wardrobe and prepare for the hat contest. Tickets are $25 for moms and daughters, $15 for kids age 4 to 12. I say get ready to lift that pinky just right at tomorrow's mother-daughter high tea.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back with you in a couple of weeks.